Welcome to Washington Today for Friday, April 22, 2022. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some of today's headlines. Georgia Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is trying to defend her right to run for re-election at a hearing in Atlanta. We'll get more information in a few minutes with The Hill staff writer Max Greenwood. A Russian military commander said Friday that Moscow aims to seize full control over eastern and southern Ukraine. The Washington Post reporting that this move would provide a path to the annexed Crimean Peninsula and to a breakaway enclave of Moldova. This is the most serious threat of this nature to Ukraine so far. It was unclear, though, whether a Russian military commander was describing official policy. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres plans to meet Tuesday with Russian President Vladimir Putin to press for fighting to stop in Ukraine. The UN chief will travel to Moscow for conversations with Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. That's according to UN spokesperson Ari Kaneko. She also said discussions about a similar visit to Ukraine are underway. We begin now in Atlanta, where Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene testified at an administrative hearing on a 14th Amendment challenge to her candidacy for re-election in Georgia's 14th congressional district. Her attorney argued that Representative Greene was engaged in, quote, legitimate political speech when she called for a response to Joe Biden's presidential victory. That's prior to last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol. Voters in the Georgia Congresswoman's district have said that Greene helped facilitate the January 6, 2021 insurrection that disrupted certification of President Biden's win. They argue that this very act makes her ineligible for re-election under the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which states that members of Congress cannot engage in insurrection or rebellion. Here's that exchange between Andrew Celli, a lawyer for the voters, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, her attorney James Bopp, and Judge Charles Boudreau.
So if someone broke the law in an effort to interfere with the counting of the electoral votes, that person would be an enemy of the Constitution. Am I right about that?
Breaking the law is unlawful. There's been over 700 people charged for what happened on January 6th.
Right. And those people were trying to interfere with the lawful process of counting the votes for the Electoral College, right?
I would assume, yes, they did. They stopped the electoral count, yes.
Right. And so those people would be enemies of the Constitution. You would agree with that, right?
I don't know if it defines it that way.
Well, having taken the oath that we saw on the screen, if you were aware that someone was going to unlawfully interfere with the constitutional process of counting the electoral votes, you'd be obliged by your oath to try to stop them, right?
Your Honor, I object. The claim is not she violated her oath. The claim is under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And so her opinion on words like enemies are words of art often in the law is just irrelevant to the matter, to whether or not she engaged, did a direct and overt act of insurrection.
Your Honor, we had a one-hour presentation on the law from Mr. Bopp. We did not object to that.
I will let you answer the question. I've forgotten what it is. Could you repeat it?
Can we ask for it to be read back?
Question. If you were aware that somebody was going to unlawfully interfere with the constitutional process of counting electoral votes, you would be obliged to have them arrested or stopped, right?
You may answer.
You may answer the question to the best of your ability.
I had no knowledge of any attempt, and so that's a question that I can't answer.
Well,
I can't answer that question.
I take your representation that you had no knowledge for the time being. I'm asking it as a hypothetical question, just to understand.
I can't answer a hypothetical question.
Well, I'm permitted to ask you one, so I'm going to ask you again. If you had knowledge in advance that someone was going to unlawfully interfere with the counting of the electoral votes in a presidential election, under your oath, you'd be obliged to do something to stop that, right?
I object. she's not being charged for violating her oath. There is no foundation laid that she had any knowledge about anything like that.
We'll come to that.
And so these hypothetical...
Sustained.
At times, the hearing became contentious over previous statements that Representative Green had made. Here's that exchange between attorney for the voters, Andrew Celli, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, her attorney, James Bopp, and Judge Charles Boudreau.
Ms. Green, you've had your disagreements with Speaker Pelosi. Isn't that right?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You've had political disagreements with her. You don't agree with some of the things she's done in her career, right?
Politically speaking, that would be correct.
Right. You don't agree with a lot of things she's done, right?
Politically speaking, that would be correct.
In fact, you think that Speaker Pelosi is a traitor to the country, right?
I'm not answering that question. It's speculation.
You've said that, haven't you, Ms. Green, that she's a traitor to the country?
No, I haven't said that.
Okay. Put up Plaintiff's Exhibit 5, please.
Oh, no, wait. Hold on now. I believe by not upholding the securing the border, that violates her oath of office.
Fair enough. I'm not interested in her oath of office. I'm interested in that you said that she's a traitor to our country, right?
I object, Your Honor. She is not. This is
quite irrelevant.
Green's lawyer, James Bopp, also argued that if the Georgia Republican congresswoman is ultimately disqualified from the ballot, it would deny residents of her district the right to cast their ballots for the candidate of their choice. Spectators cheer Green as she enters Georgia courtroom. That headline from thehill.com by Max Greenwood, national politics reporter. That's how it began, Max Greenwood. Tell us where it went from there.
So, you know, this is a really interesting case. What we've seen is both sides present their opening arguments right after that. And what the attorney for the challengers in this case are arguing is look, the January 6th riot at the Capitol was an insurrection. It maybe didn't look like the kind of armed insurrection like the Civil War, but that there's other precedent for this kind of thing, that there's Jay's Rebellion and the Whiskey Rebellion in the early Republic. And so just because... you know, these people weren't in military uniform. Look, this was still an attack on the U.S. government, on the U.S. Constitution. And while Marjorie Taylor Greene may not have been out there with the rioters, while she may not have breached police lines, you know, she was very much a key player in this. She encouraged it. She incited it. And, you know, this was her ultimate goal in what she was saying, you know, up till that point. You know, on the other side of this, we have Greene's attorney who pretty much says, look, what happened on January 6th was despicable, but Marjorie Taylor Greene's just not responsible for it. She didn't intend to incite violence. She was participating in, you know, legitimate political speech is what he said. And he also kind of goes on to make this argument that if you remove Marjorie Taylor Greene from the ballot next month, you're depriving her voters of the right to vote for a candidate of their choosing. So, you know, he really tries to present this not only as you know, an evidentiary hearing about whether or not she should be on the ballot next month, but really, you know, over the right to vote and who gets to make those decisions.
Now, the hearing comes as part of a legal challenge, as written in your article, by a group of Georgia voters who argue that a provision of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, known as the Disqualification Clause, effectively prohibits Green from holding federal office because of her alleged involvement in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Is that the crux of this hearing?
You know, that is the crux of this hearing, or at least ostensibly so. You know, but there's a lot of subtext there, and there's a lot of other questions that need to be answered. So one thing that we've heard from the challengers' attorneys on multiple cases is really trying to establish that this was an insurrection. That, you know, that this wasn't a peaceful protest. It wasn't legitimate political discourse or legitimate protected speech, you know, but really an attempt to overthrow, you know, or rather stop a congressional proceeding and you know, overthrow the normal order of U.S. government operations. And look, they face a big hurdle in actually proving that. They've tried to point multiple times to, you know, Green's own tweets, Facebook posts, her own public statements, comments to reporters. And what we've seen multiple times now is her come back and say, look, I know what that says, but that wasn't my intention. She's refused multiple times to answer certain questions. One thing we've heard from her a lot is simply, I don't recall that, or I don't know, when asked about certain statements she made. So I think right now, yes, it is a case about whether or not she should remain on the ballot, whether or not she's qualified to serve in public office. But really, this is a bigger case about just trying to answer a lot of what happened on January 6th, what it was and what it means.
And have we had a success, or have lawyers in the past or recent history have had success using the Constitution's 14th Amendment as a foundation in a court case?
Not really that I can point to. Similar cases have been brought this year against Madison Cawthorn in North Carolina, for example. He challenged that, and a judge came down on his side. So I think this is going to be a difficult case to prove, but it could have repercussions for some other stuff down the road. I mean, don't forget, other members of Congress are facing similar challenges. So I think of Paul Gosar or Andy Biggs out in Arizona. No matter what happens today, it's going to have a ripple effect. And I should also point out that, in the event that she is disqualified from the ballot, she can still appeal that decision. There's a tight turnaround. Early voting in Georgia starts, I believe, May 7th. The primary is May 24th. Whatever comes ahead of this today, is going to have an impact on her political career and whether or not she can appear on that ballot. Even if this is overturned down the line, but this is a really, as the judge put it, a deadly, deadly serious case.
National politics reporter for The Hill, Max Greenwood, thank you very much for explaining this nuanced issue for us.
Thank you.
Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are a few more headlines. A bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers is calling on the Biden administration to establish field hospitals near Ukraine's border and ramp up medical support for what's expected to be a months-long war waged by Russia since its invasion on February 24th. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby has more on that call to action in a moment. Mask mandates return to some U.S. college campuses, along with a switch to online classes and scaled back large gatherings in response to upticks in coronavirus infections. Colleges in Washington, D.C., New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Texas have reimposed a range of virus measures, with Howard University moving to remote learning amid a surge in cases in the nation's capital. This is the third straight academic year that has been upended by COVID-19. The European Union is taking aim at hate speech, disinformation, and other harmful content online. EU officials are getting closer to an agreement on a sweeping law that would force big tech companies to police themselves harder, make it easier for users to flag problems, and empower regulators to punish non-compliance with billions of dollars in fines. EU officials were negotiating Friday over the final details of the Digital Services Act. The measure would overhaul the 27-nation bloc's digital rulebook to rein in the power of social media companies and other digital platforms such as Facebook, Google, and Amazon. We continue now with House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy. The House Minority Leader is drawing fire from Republican lawmakers after being caught in a lie about telling colleagues he considered calling on then-President Donald Trump to resign after the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Now, according to audio posted by the New York Times and aired on Rachel Maddow's MSNBC show, Leader McCarthy told fellow GOP lawmakers shortly after the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol that he would urge then-President Donald Trump to resign. Here's that recording of a January 10th, 2021 conversation between House Leader Kevin McCarthy and former House Republican Caucus Chair Liz Cheney of Wyoming.
Liz, you on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, Kevin. I guess first a question. When we were talking about the 25th Amendment resolution, and you asked if what happens if it gets there after he's gone, is there any chance, are you hearing, that he might resign? Is there any reason to think that might happen?
I've had some few discussions. My gut tells me no. I'm seriously thinking of having that conversation with him tonight. I haven't talked to him in a couple days. From what I know of him, I mean, you guys all know him too. Do you think he'd ever back away? But what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to call him. This is what I think. No, it'll pass the House. I think there's a chance it'll pass the Senate even when he's gone. And I think there's a lot of different ramifications for that. Now, I haven't had a discussion with the Dems that if he did resign, would it not happen? Now, this is one personal fear I have. I do not want to get into any conversations about Pence pardoning anything like that. I mean, the only discussion I would have with him is that I think this will pass, and it would be my recommendation you should resign. I mean, that would be my take, but I don't think he would take it, but I don't know.
Then at a January 13, 2022 press conference, Leader McCarthy says this about that phone call.
Yes, Mr. Leader.
In the spirit of disclosing private conversations, did you tell House Republicans on a January 11th phone call that President Trump told you he agreed that he bore some responsibility for January 6th, as Chairman Thompson's letter indicates?
I'm not sure what call you're talking about. So.
On Thursday, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy issued a statement denying that New York Times report, with audio of himself criticizing former President Donald Trump. Here's Leader McCarthy from the audio recording released by the New York Times.
All right, I know this is not fun. I know this is not great. I know this is very tough. But what I want to do, especially through here, is I don't want to rush things. I want everybody to have all the information needed. I've had it with this guy. What he did is unacceptable. Nobody can defend that, and nobody should defend it.
Meanwhile, leaked Trump impeachment tape puts McCarthy in bind as he chases Speaker's gavel. That headline from the Washington Examiner by Julie Grace Brufke, congressional reporter there. In your article, you write House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is drawing fire from Republican lawmakers after being caught in a lie about telling colleagues he considered calling on then President Donald Trump to resign after the January 6th Capitol riots. What does this all mean?
Now, I've spoken to members of Congress out of the Republican Party from different factions. Conservatives are obviously kind of upset about his criticisms of Donald Trump. A lot of people I talked to this morning particularly were like, we're kind of waiting to hear Trump's respond to this. Now, since I wrote that story, McCarthy's spoken to some lawmakers about how he's spoken to President Trump, and Trump has assured him that he isn't angry with him over this. So that may change the dynamic a little bit there, but a lot of the members I've talked to are also upset about reporting from the same report that of McCarthy saying that he would have liked to have seen some of the conservative lawmakers' social media accounts also banned in that time frame, which might even be a bigger issue in terms of a long-term backlash for him.
So what is this lie that he was caught in?
Now, the New York Times reporters, Jonathan Martin, they were on Rachel Maddow last night. McCarthy had issued yesterday a statement kind of completely denying that he had ever called on, had talked about calling on Trump to resign following the January 6th riots, saying the reporting was false, that it was the mainstream media trying to derail Republicans heading into the midterms. But then after that, they went on Rachel Maddow's show and released the audio of him saying it. So after that, I mean, there are a number of members of Congress that I've spoken to that said they're almost more concerned about him just publicly being willing to lie about something like that, which could also be a problem for him as things kind of inch closer to November and leadership races start to heat up.
And what does that mean for Leader McCarthy for the midterms?
I'm not sure how much it'll impact the midterms as a whole, but I'm sure the Democrats, from a political standpoint, are looking to kind of use him as the boogeyman on the right, where I'm sure they're going to be pointing out in campaign ads and linking vulnerable members of Congress to McCarthy, pointing out that he lied and got caught in it. So, I mean, it could be problematic, but I think I'm not sure it'll be a major issue in election season, more so in the leadership race standpoint, more so from a leadership race standpoint.
And politically, where does Leader McCarthy go from here?
No, I think Congress right now, members are still on Easter recess. They're going to come back next week. They'll have their conference meeting. And I think he's probably going to have to address that at this point with members of his conference. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out and what questions kind of arise from inside that closed-door conference meeting. But and it's something that he's going to have to address with his critics. And I think as things move closer and Republicans look like they're going to take back the majority come November, those leadership races are going to become more heated, and he's going to have the knives are going to be out. So I think he's definitely going to have some smoothing over that he's going to need to do with some of his critics there.
And in fact, you write in your article, and one senior GOP lawmaker asserted they believe that tensions will ease by the time the speaker's race comes around.
I mean, I think that it's something that definitely could pop up down the line for him. As we all know, I mean, news cycles, it's a long time out from November, and a couple months is a long time in politics. So a lot could happen. The news cycle could change. We'll see how his relationship with Trump kind of continues, to see if that continues to remain smooth sailing. The two reporters at Ron Rachel Maddow last night said there were additional tapes, so we haven't seen what could emerge and what's going to come from their books. So there could be more information out there. So I think there could be a lot of developments, but I think it'll probably linger and will be brought up. More news to come.
The headline, Leaked Trump Impeachment Tape, puts McCarthy in a bind as he chases Speaker's gavel, by Julie Grace Brufke, congressional reporter at The Washington Examiner. Find that article at WashingtonExaminer.com. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
A bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers wants the Biden administration to establish field hospitals near Ukraine's border. The Associated Press is reporting that it has documented 36 Russian attacks on medical facilities, hitting medics, patients, and even newborns. Here's Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby with a response.
A number of House members have written to the secretary asking that the military provide field hospitals and other kinds of medical assistance for civilian casualties in Ukraine, possibly including armored ambulances that provided to the Ukrainians. Is the Pentagon working on any of that sort of thing?
No, I think we're just now in receipt of the letter. There's, I have no plans to speak to regarding that. We will obviously will digest the letter from these members of Congress, certainly take it seriously and respond appropriately, but I don't have any plans to speak to at this time. You know, we do still have members of the 82nd Airborne in Poland. There has not been a massive need for them in terms of helping American refugees, but that's obviously, if there would be additional support that we could provide for humanitarian assistance, it would be something that we would do absolutely in lockstep with the Polish government. I mean, it's their country, so we'd want to be talking to the host nation about what they thought the needs would be, and make sure that whatever we're doing is in support of what they're doing to support so many refugees.
So it hasn't been yet considered or ruled out? Or
there's no planning going on at the Pentagon right now to set up field hospitals. Again, we'll take seriously the suggestions and the recommendations by members of Congress on everything. We always do. But whatever you do inside Poland or any other NATO country right now on the eastern flank, you have to do it in full consultation with the host government. It has to be, a need that they too believe the United States military can fill. When you look at everything we're doing on the eastern flank, whether it's air policing or maritime domain awareness or additional air defense capabilities, everything we've done since before the invasion has been in keeping with whatever those host nations desire in terms of additional capabilities. And so if it's a desire by the Polish government for additional U.S. support for humanitarian purposes, obviously we would take that very seriously.
Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby. President Joe Biden is taking steps to restore national forests that have been devastated by wildfires, drought, and blight. He used an Earth Day visit to Seattle to sign an executive order protecting some of the nation's largest and oldest trees. Here's President Biden speaking at Seattle Seward Park.
On this day, 52 years ago, millions of Americans of every age and background rallied together on Earth Day. A guy I worked with as a young senator back in those days was a guy named Gaylord Nelson from Wisconsin. And the guy who helped organize Earth Day was a guy who's from Delaware, worked for me as well. and Mike McCabe. And, you know, it was they had a vision for a healthier, more prosperous America. And over time, they delivered. They delivered. Cleaner water, proof that sustainable environment can mean a stronger economy. You know, and one of the things I'm proudest of in our administration, before I went into detail with my quote, green agenda, I got all the unions together. Literally got all the unions together. Bigger said the unions view it as against their interest. And starting with the IBW, electric workers, they endorsed it. And every union has stepped up because they figured it out. Their jobs, they're the ones who can help us transition in ways like never before. It's not going to cost them jobs. It's going to increase jobs. The IBW is going to be building 50,000 electric stations, starting stations all across America, for example. And so, look, change continues today, and a new generation of Americans helping us lead the way against the threat of climate change. You know, every time I get a little down, I don't know about my colleagues, I suspect they're the same, I just turn on the television or take a look at all the young people. This young generation is not going to put up with them, all this stuff. No, they're not. I mean, they are really, really energized, whether it's basic human rights or it's the environment. They're just not stopping. And from day one of my administration, we've stood with them. Governor, I hate to admit it, but I was part of that early Earth Day. I was only 7 years old, but God, oh my Lord, I can't admit I said that. But anyway, it's been a passion of mine as long as I've been involved in public life.
President Biden speaking at Seattle Seward Park. The order requires the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the National Park Service to identify threats to older trees, such as wildfire and climate change, and develop policies to safeguard them. And if you missed any of this program, you can find it at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington, delivered daily, right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Thanks for listening today to Washington Today.